You ready to fire up? Hello, everybody. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman back for the 40th, count them, 40 GREEP election protection Zoom calls. All you folks out there and listening on the Progressive Radio Network, we welcome you. We're going to go at this for the next 90 minutes. You'll be on for 60. If you want to stick with us for the full time, go to Election Protection 2024. electionprotection2024.org and get the link for the call and join us on the Zoom. We go till 6:40 Eastern time, and then we kibitz for a while longer for anyone who wants to stay on. We have gone as late as 8 o'clock Eastern time, but we turn off the recording at 6:40. Greetings to everybody. Great to see everybody with us. We've got 67 people with us, which is the year I graduated from the University of Michigan. We have a couple of Michigan alums on the call, Stephen Spitz. We are going to go deep into the real weeds of the two big bills in front of the Congress now, which are totally landmark, very, very important pieces of legislation, extremely complicated, huge impact on our democracy, H.R. 1 and H.R. 4. And we are fortunate to have the great Joel Siegel with us, who spent 13 years in running Congress and got us the Affordable Care Act, and is going to tell us how and what we can change in these two major pieces of legislation. We've also got Howie Hawkins, the presidential candidate from the Green Party, has some pretty deep, detailed information on how H.R. 1 in particular would affect third parties. Laura Chamberlain has written a memo, which is in the chat, on various pieces of H.R. 1. But this is the whole Megillah H.R. 1. This is like the Torah coming down from Mount Sinai in terms of what we're going to have to deal with election protection. I do want to say, and we'll get into that in a couple of minutes, there's a tremendous amount of stuff going on in the country. Anybody thought this election was going to end election protection activism got it exactly wrong. I want to make a suggestion. I haven't seen it anywhere. They are going to hold, the Congress is going to empower a commission to look into the January 6th attack on the Congress, which I think is great. They're calling it a 9/11 commission. I would like to see the Congress also do a full investigation of the charges that the election was stolen in 2020. I think that would really give us a great platform to talk about protecting elections. And clearly the election was not stolen, but others have been, and others could be in the future. And a lot of us have questions about the senatorial races. So I would like to see a congressional commission investigating 2020 to put to bed finally the assertions of the steal, but also to deal with the realities of protecting our elections going forward. We mentioned last call, there are 400, count them, 400 bills on the state level in more than 30 states to do various things to protect elections. And there are well over 100 in well over 30 states that are designed to sabotage our elections. And since we're looking at serious gerrymandered Republican legislatures in most of the swing states, it's a fight for our life. Now there is there are a couple of these I want to go into before we go, that we need to look at before we go into H.R. 1 and 4. In Florida, there is a lawsuit based on the 19th Amendment to protect women's rights to vote in Florida. And Susan Shamblin, are you on the call? Susan Shamblin, are you with us? Okay, so we will be sending out more about that. Does anyone else have detailed information about that lawsuit? It's the first lawsuit I can ever remember based on the 19th Amendment, but which gave women the right to vote. So this is a crucial lawsuit, and it's from our side on protecting women's rights to vote in Florida. Needs to be looked at. Stacey Abrams is being sued also in Georgia. I don't know if anyone has detailed information on that. If you do, speak up. I did post a link to an op-ed in the New York Times. I sent it to you in the flyer that Stacey Abrams co-wrote. It is a great op-ed. When you get a minute, it talks about the 10 years of organizing that she and others, it's co-written with another woman, put into getting Georgia organized at the grassroots. It is a great piece of work, a great guide to how grassroots organizing can go forward to do to other states what they did to Georgia, which is, of course, exactly how we have to go. I mean, some of us are still staggered by the idea that the great state of Georgia, rebirth place of the Ku Klux Klan and so much, could have in a single election sent a black guy and a Jewish guy to the US Senate. I mean, this is absolutely unprecedented in American history and certainly in Georgia history. And this op-ed that she's gotten in the New York Times talks a lot about how she did it, how they did it with 10 years of grassroots organizing. It's really worth looking at. And like I say, the link, Steve, if you can put it up in the chat, but the link is in the invite to this meeting.
Harvey, what are the grounds for the suit?
I don't know. I don't have the detail. We'll have the detail next week. I just saw it mentioned, you know, and believe me, the lawsuits, as we all know, the lawsuits are going to come pouring down on both sides. You got 400 pro-democracy, 100 anti-democracy lawsuits at least, and this is just February. You know, I mean, these next 2 years are going to be absolutely cram-packed with legal battles and political battles all over the vote. I mean, if nothing else, the election protection movement in the last 20 years has brought this issue to the forefront, and it's going to be fought out over the next 10 years at least. But certainly in the coming months, we will be flooded with very important lawsuits that are going to come out of nowhere, and we will see. Susan Shamblin was writing about this. Apparently she's not yet joined the call. She has been on other calls. And if she shows up, she can give us more
details. Yeah, she's here. She was unmuted earlier, so.
Susan Shamblin?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry, I have a lot of background noise with the animals, but I'll try and keep them quiet. The lawsuit in Florida comes from the people who have served their sentence for felony convictions, but then have to pay the fine before they're allowed to vote. That's the lawsuit with the woman in Florida that they are putting forth. But HR 1 has it in there where people who have served the sentence can vote. And they think that'll go to the courts because of state versus federal rules over elections.
Amendment. That's pretty clever. I guess they said it was discriminating against women.
Because the courts dismissed it when they brought in the 14th Amendment.
Okay.
So then they came back with the 19th Amendment.
So basically the lawsuit says that it's illegal to require ex-felons to pay these fees before they can vote. Is that right?
Yes, they're trying to get that so it's an undue, you know, tax burden on them to have to pay the fees before they can, because they've served their time.
All right, so basically it's a poll tax.
Yeah.
So they, you would think they'd also bring in the 24th Amendment. Well, right? I mean, that would stand to reason, but I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on the Zoom calls, so what can I tell you? Okay.
Same for me.
All right, well, we'll follow that, but that's a pretty important lawsuit. I did read enough of HR 1 to know that they do address that issue in HR 1. The idea that ex-felons could be barred from voting because they didn't pay their fees is in HR 1. And HR1, as I understand it, and Joel will qualify this, Joel is our constitutional lawyer here, but HR1 specifically states that it is addressing only only federal elections. And they're claiming jurisdiction over the states on federal elections. And that's how they say that they can address issues like ex-felons not being allowed to vote in federal elections. So we'll see more of that. I want to go to John Brakey. John, can you give us a quick rundown on what's happening in Arizona? This is really nuclear war in Arizona, man. People are really at each other's throats over this one.
It's pretty amazing that here we are in the middle of February and the election season is not over in a lot of states, particularly Arizona. And so I have filed suit working with the Libertarian Party against the Maricopa County and Maricopa elections and the county's the Board of Supervisors for making believe that they're doing something and calling it an audit and totally misleading. It's very disturbing. And they're claiming that they've done four audits already. And these four audits, what are they? They're logic and accuracy test. And you know, that's an important test. It proves everything's working right now, but it doesn't prove that all the results are good because of the scenario of Volkswagen. So we're breaking ground in that lawsuit claiming that 92% of the ballots have never been tested. Now, I want you to know, I anticipate everything adding up perfect, but we're 0.1%. And you know, I've been really working hard with Republicans who are deeply involved to help them find a center, because a lot of them really want to know if elections are real or not. These people are like we were in 2004 for many of us who fell down the rabbit hole, and they got some wild, crazy ideas, a lot of conspiracies. You can tell my voice is hoarse because I do so much radio and talking to people to help them understand. And so we will be in court Wednesday, believe it or not. The Republican Party filed an amicus brief to join the suit. And the guy who did the suit was one of my lawyers 7 years ago in the Nogales case, where we had an NSA agent come in, and that agent, Mickey Donahoe, testified in court that a logic and accuracy test only proved things were working right at this moment. And a year later, the Volkswagen scandal broke, and Volkswagen proved, because first off, what's the difference between a logic and accuracy test and an emission test? Both tests prove everything is working right, when clearly in the Volkswagen scandal, they shipped in 588,000 cars in the United States, passed emissions maybe 2 million times and got away with it, built 11 million cars worldwide that cheated all the way around. I mean, it's an incredible story.
John, so exactly and precisely, what are you suing for? What are you asking?
I'm suing for access. They want to block out the political parties. Really, I think that everybody knows that they're really blocking me out. And they brought in, believe it or not, hard to believe, the two Dominion test companies that tested their equipment for the EAC. Well, they brought them in to run the test. And so all of these tests.
You want access to all ballot materials in the Arizona election?
No, the Senate does, and I'm convincing them to get out of that picture. What I want is, I want the ballot images. I want them to be sent out to two different vendors. First one is our friend Ray Lutz. Let him have a set and pay for it, and then also Clear Ballot, and then return the images back to the people in 743 precincts that anybody can audit. Voting is the secret process. Counting is a public process, and it's not meant for government to count these things secretly and not give us audits that are believable. Rather than
you want the publication, the public availability, public access to all the ballot images from the election.
That will come to the Senate. What I'm suing for is that they're illegally doing things that don't prove that the system is real or not. They're making believe they're doing something and spending a lot of money. And they blocked out the political parties from being part of the fiduciary. In my state, we are a party-centric state. The parties have access. There's three kinds of access in this country. One is candidate, that's mostly East Coast. The second type is party oversight. We're 1912 Constitution, parties existed. The third type is more public, which California is exploring, which I prefer that more than the other two, because the third one is not as political. It really isn't. You don't get
all right. Well, listen, whatever you can post about this lawsuit, keep us informed. And I've been following some of the
Republican Party has jumped in and become an amicus brief. That's an interesting scenario. And I'm trying to drag in the Democrats, because in 2010, we put a platform in our party, because I am a Democrat, proud of it, progressive, more or less. And we're gonna hold them to it too, because the reality is we need to approach this problem as Americans united for democracy, integrity, and transparency.
Okay. Well, listen, post all the documentation. If you'll post the amicus briefs, a bunch of us, I'm sure we'd like to see the amicus briefs. Send Steve Caruso the PDFs. If you're Steve and Mike, send them the PDFs. We want to see these documents. This is clearly a lawsuit that's going to have a big impact. And I'm glad you're doing it, and we need the detail. Ray Lutz?
You know what I'm hoping, to add, is that we're hoping to have a Senate hearing. This time, not to have Rudy there, is to have people who are Democrats there and let us tell the Republicans what's really wrong, and also convince our fellow Democrats that we have to stop being tribes. Act like Americans. Let's go solve a problem.
Ray Lutz?
So, here's the important part is we get these ballot images. We have this thing, Audit Engine, now, which runs in the cloud and is able to process all 2 million ballots and look at them in a very short amount of time. I'm talking about, less than half a day, we'll have the whole thing done after setup. And so we can have the reports ballot by ballot, what the differences were, how the bubbles were misinterpreted, and so forth. What this will do is definitely either expose something or not. And already when we've tried to apply this in Florida, Volusia was missing 41,000 ballot images. They had to go back and look for them. We had thousands of duplicated ballots from St. Lucie County. We had to get that result. So just at the very initial thing of, look, are these ballot images? Let's at least count them up and make sure that that corresponds with the number of votes that you say you have. Without even, looking at them, that's a good first test. And, if we can let people also, when we get done with this, our report, we can show, here's the differences. You can sample, look at any ballots you want and see if they correspond. And key to this is being able to mate the actual physical ballot to the image. And we can go in there and sample the actual physical ballot, take a look at it, make sure it looks at the image. Looks exactly like the image, and provides some confidence that the result is what they say it is. Because John is right, a lack of transparency here. The public doesn't feel good about this, because people go back into a back room and then they come out and say it's all done and everything is fine. And this, So it's, and you can watch some of the podcasts and stuff of the people there who are definitely up in arms about what they think is a huge amount of election fraud. But it's our goal to either find it or show that that it didn't exist. One way
or another. You will be using the ballot images.
Yeah.
When the ballots are scanned into the scanning machines at the end of the process, you want to retrieve the ballot images now and use them, compare them to the paper ballots. So this is the ultimate, one of the ultimate goals we're looking for is the ability to do this. And if you establish this in Arizona, where you can go in, look at the ballot images, and then look at the actual ballots, that will give us, going forward, a really good monitor on whether elections are stolen, right?
Yeah, well, we're going to have a report. I'm working on it right now because we've done these audits in Collier County, Florida, Volusia County, Florida, and we're working on St. Lucie. We now know what the, you know, what the difficulties are in actually implementing this, but we're solving all those, and this will provide a way to have an independent look, because, you know, the worst thing about what they're doing right now is they're having the election officials themselves do the audit of themselves. So this is like asking someone on the freeway to give themselves a ticket if they happen to go over the speed limit, you know, flag down the officer and say, give me a ticket, please.
Well, this
just ain't going to happen. Okay. So we have to have independence, citizens oversight. The organization that I represent is independent, nonpartisan. We've developed this without any, you know, ties to parties or anything else, or these big manufacturers that no one can trust. So we can provide that independent approach.
So you will come out of this with a protocol so that we can do in all American elections, we will know exactly how to take the ballot images and compare them to the paper ballots. So that really closes the door on the submarine here. I mean, that's a big deal.
Even if you can't get all the way to the ballot, to the paper, you know, being able to check what the ballot images say, comparing that to what they claim later on was the final result, eliminates most of the big hacks that I'm worried about, which is where they just go into the tabulator and shift 10, 20,000 votes over from one candidate to another. Okay. Going in and manipulating the ballot images is very difficult to do, especially if they're not prepared to do it. But, you know, to really tie it off, you're right, you need to go in and look at the paper and compare that with the final outcome as well. And we're for doing that.
All right, well, this is a big deal. As everybody knows, we've been looking for a way for at least 20 years, if not 240, to give ourselves the ability to check definitively based on ballot images and paper ballots, whether or not a vote count is accurate. And this actually gives us the ability to do that. If we have elections that are conducted on hand-marked paper ballots that are scanned in to digital machines that give us a ballot image that's preserved, then you'll be able to show in Arizona exactly how we can check to see if the vote counts are accurate. That is
and
a big deal.
Is, I want you to know that the ballot is married to the ballot image because they're using electronic adjudication for overvotes and write-ins. And so you got the perfect scenario. I just can't figure out why they haven't given them out. But, you know, I'm lecturing and meeting with groups of, you know, Trumpers. I mean, I walked up to this one building and I was scared to death. You know, I thought I was going to a studio, and I walk in, it's Trump signs and mega. And I walked in there and I found people just like me.
Okay. All right.
You know, it's interesting. Because, you know, we are tribes. And it's interesting, a guy like me can go in there and help that tribe understand.
Okay. All right, that's good. Okay.
Let me just say one more thing, Harvey. Let me just say one more thing, because to put this in perspective, you know, we used to have hand-marked paper ballots that were counted in the precinct, and they'd call in the numbers, very distributed. Okay, so it was very hard to affect that more than a precinct or, you know, here and there. But now we have these huge manufacturers, two big ones, one that has 47% of the market, the other 37%. And these machines now are everywhere. And so basically we can't trust these machines. We can't trust these big manufacturers. You look at them, their ties, there's two brothers that were behind both of them.
Yeah.
You know, of course we've heard about demeanor and everything, but so this is going to allow us to get this thing under control. Thanks.
Great, very good. Thank you so much. Laura Chamberlain has a hand, then we're gonna go to Joel Siegel, talk about Puerto Rico and then the bills. I do want to throw in, by the way, the Arizona legislature is also considering a bill that would allow the Arizona legislature to override the popular vote and choose the electors to the Electoral College. In other words, while all this is going on with the paper ballots and the digital images, the Arizona legislature is attempting a coup d'etat, where they would be able to preempt the popular vote and just turn around as they could, they were threatening to do this year is just turn around and award the electoral votes to the state no matter what the public said. That bill is in front of the Arizona legislature, and I'm sure it came from Alec, and it's going to turn up in all the other legislatures. It's unbelievable. Okay.
There's also a bill in Georgia that is going to require, it's number 29, HR or whatever they say in Georgia, 29, which is going to require two pieces of ID and that you send in to apply for your ballot with one piece of ID, and then you have to send in and send back either one or two pieces of ID with your ballot. And of course, all this ID that they're requiring is private information that shouldn't be going through the mails in the first place.
Right. And they will not allow student IDs, but they will allow gun licenses. Laura Chamberlain, thank you for that, Lynn. Laura Chamberlain, yeah. You had a hand real quick.
Right. So this is one of the major flaws of HR1 is that it allows the growth of ballot marking devices, and then it doesn't talk about any. It has a task force for risk-limited audits, and it doesn't. The audit section is very, very short. So this is one thing that we should really push at this time. You know, on a federal level, because if we get it at the federal level, then the states are going to have to, you know, comply, and then they will, they may be more apt to be pushed for the local and the state the races to be doing the same thing. And I wanted to ask you, John, in your state, are ballots themselves public records so that you can just do a FOIA and get the ballots themselves?
No, yes and no. In our constitution, they have ballots or a public record. But no, they're not, because of the 0.1% law. And then in 2016, when I sued the Pima County to preserve the ballot images, they snuck behind my back and passed a law called 16625 and said ballot images must be held just like ballots and not copied or passed up without the proper authority. That's what we're working on right now, is getting that authority. And that could be done by the Board of Supervisors, by the treasurer when she has them or he has them, or by the state legislator. I am chasing all three to get them released. And I think it will probably happen out of the Board of Supervisors. And my funny feeling is that somehow they're doing some kinds of audits now, because we had a bizarre incident happened in 2004 that I won't go into here, but they found 489 new votes after counting 20,000, a lead change from four votes to another guy by 14 with two machine recounts. And the judge asked, what machine recount do I believe? And they lied.
Okay.
Well, I just want to say that, first of all, John Brakey is my hero. And I think that we really do need to do a deep dive call on these issues, because this is critical. This work that John's been doing and Ray and others is so important. I did want to mention there are some people who I invite on the call. I apologize for this, who may have to leave early. So I did want to make sure I can get through HR 1 and HR 4.
All right, go ahead and proceed with what you got. We can talk about Puerto Rico later, but let's. This is Joel Siegel, everybody. Joel was Representative John Conyers' aide for 13, 14 years, very for the Affordable Care Act, and has also a degree in law, so we can jump in on HR 1 now, and also HR 4. Joel, take it over now. We don't have any other hands at the moment, and do what you got to do here with HR 1. And wow. Howie Hawkins will join us also to talk about the third party aspects. But why don't you jump in, Joel, and get your people in?
Yeah, I feel bad. I didn't want John and Ray, they were rocking, but if we could do another call, you know, with them, so we can.
That'll be ongoing. Absolutely. So okay. Go ahead.
So by the way, so I wrote the bill Medicare for All that Bernie ran on, and the Affordable Care Act, that's what came out of that, by the way. So I just hope that everyone here will be for single payer, Medicare for All. It's the only way to go. First of all, what HR 1 has got to be, I don't know who wrote this bill, but it's just got to be one of the best bills I've ever read. I'm going to go over kind of the basic, you know, contours of it, HR 4 and HR 1. So basically, hold on 1 second. By the way, bear with me 1 second.
Okay.
You ready?
Yeah, go.
All right. So the key provisions of the voting rights, I'm sorry, you have to bear with me. For HR 1, the bill requires states to offer same day voter registration for federal elections, and to permit voters to make changes to the registration at the polls. It requires states to hold early voting for at least 15 days and would establish automatic voter registration. I'm not going to go too deep into all this stuff. I'm just going to go through the contours. Is that
yes.
Okay?
Then we'll go deep.
Yeah. The bill would also expand opportunities to vote by mail.
We like that. That's
and
good.
And would make Election Day a federal holiday.
Wow, that's good.
Real good. The bill would require states to offer online voter registration, which has already been adopted in 39 states and the District of Columbia. Now, under the bill, the states would be required to establish a system to allow applications to be electronically completed. The bill would make it a criminal offense to corruptly hinder, interfere with, or prevent another person from registering to vote, would establish criminal penalties for such conduct. I'm going to go over some really cool stuff too. The bill would authorize 16 and 17-year-olds to pre-register to vote in advance of them becoming 18. And then Ayanna Pressley wanted to amend the bill to allow 16-year-old votes to vote to pre-register. That didn't go through. Now here's some really, really progressive stuff for the voter suppression folks. The bill would prohibit the practice of voter caging and restrict the practicing of voter roll purges by limiting states' efforts to remove registered voters from the polls and setting conditions for when they could do so. If this had been passed, then Stacey Abrams would have been the governor of Georgia, because I think they purged 200,000 voters, and that's about how much she lost. I mean, she lost by a very small margin. Specifically, the bill would require states to obtain certain information before removing voters from the polls, and would prohibit voter purges, this is really important, from taking place less than 6 months before an election. And a lot of the purges do happen, you know, in that time period. The bill
so
would
if also- they if they can't purge, if they have to purge, if they, any purge that occurs 6 months before the election, that gives you time to appeal, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, to re-register.
Great. That's great.
Re-register. What Stacey Abrams did, and NAACP is, they re-registered all these people who they found out had been purged. Right.
Yeah.
That was the genius of Stacey Abrams. All right, you're going to purge our rolls. We're going to call them up and we're going to get them re-registered. That's what Andrew Miller was working on. Notify any voter tagged from remover from the rolls, and the operative word is timely. Any voter tagged for removal from the polls, and give them an opportunity to contest the removal or seek reinstatement of their registration. The bill would also restore voting rights to felons who complete prison terms. Now, in North Carolina, there was not a timely notification of people who have been purged. There was no notification for a very long time until the grassroots, until we pressured the election boards to notify, they weren't going to notify anybody. Now, here's Ray, I think you'll like this, and John, especially you, Uncle Harvey. The bill contains election security provisions, including a voter verified paper ballot provision mandating the use of paper ballots. that can be marked by voters either by hand or with a ballot marking device and inspected by the voter to allow any errors to be corrected before the ballot is cast. The bill would also require state officials to preserve paper ballots for recounts or audits and to conduct a hand count of ballots for a recount and audits. The bill would require the voting machines used in all federal elections to be manufactured in the United States. I have to say, this is to me very problematic, part of the bill. It's right. Problematic.
So they allow ballot marking devices.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's what, when you pass the bill like this, the one thing we're gonna have to figure out is there a funding provisions? Because in order to get a state to change from electronic machines to paper ballots, one would think, well, that's real simple. No, it's not simple. If you've had a state that spent $170 million or whatever on, you know, actually ran into this when I was in Congress working on paper ballots, they'll say, well, we already spent all this money. Where are we gonna get this money from? Hopefully what this federal bill would be able to do is provide the states the money that they need, you know, to move towards paper ballots. Now, the rest of the stuff I'm going to go through real fast. One is campaign finance reform. It's just really one sentence that you got to be aware of. The bill would introduce voluntary, that's the key word, voluntary public financing for campaigns, matching small donations at a 6-to-1 ratio. And it also incorporates campaign finance reform provisions from the Disclose Act. The bill expresses support for a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. That's pretty good stuff. I don't think it goes far enough, but it's okay. It's a step in the right direction. In terms of the ethics part of the bill, every president has to show vice president their tax returns for the
previous. Really? Is that legally binding? Is that legal?
Yeah.
Well, they have to do it.
Well, it's only legally binding if it's in law. If it's in law. So in other words, if you pass a law that says you got to show it, then you can be held into court if you don't.
Wow. We like right? that.
No, it's pretty cool. There's some pretty cool disclosure laws in here about how much, you know, dark money's coming in. So that's important. And then statehood for the District of Columbia.
It's in the bill?
Yeah, let me read the language though. This is the 2019 version. Made findings in support of admitting the District of Columbia as a state, affirming Congress's power to create a new state in the populated area that is now DC. So yes, in 2020 of June, the House approved HR 51, a separate piece of legislation that would make the populated portion of the district a state on a nearly party line vote. And surprise, surprise, the measure was not taken up by the Republican controlled Senate. Gerrymandering.
Real quick on where you got DC.
Yeah.
What will it take legally to make DC a state? Can the Congress, with a simple majority, make DC a state?
That's the $100 million question. It seems like that would be the case, but then you're going to deal with the filibuster. It's through budget reconciliation. So if you make DC the 51st state and you can show, you know, there's going to be money that will be going, right? There's money that will go from Congress to DC, then it had to be done through budget reconciliation, because if you try to break gerrymandering, what do you need? 17, I think, Republicans. You're not going to get that. But you know, these are the kind of discussions that this bill will generate, legal discussions and discussions on, you know, in the media, but it's going to be up to the grassroots. I'm going to talk about that just for a minute when I close. This gerrymandering though is so cool. The bill would thwart gerrymandering by requiring states, the operative word is requiring, states to use independent commissions to draw congressional district lines, except in the 7 states with only one congressional district. Now, if this happens, that would be a revolution, because gerrymandering is based on race. Gerrymandering is why Obama Congress turned red. It wasn't because of Obamacare. That's a mythology that none of you believe that. It was strict read rat fucked, and you'll explain that explains what happened in 2009 and 2010 with gerrymandering.
But we have to understand that the anti-gerrymandering provisions, if this becomes law, do not apply to state legislative races, right? This is only about federal races. Am I right about that?
Yes.
So that's unfortunate. So it'll clean up the problem with congressional gerrymandering, but it won't help us in the states.
We'd have to do some more research on that.
No, I'm pretty sure. Well,
I think you're
by
right.
The way, for everybody who's interested, I pushed the links to both HR 1 and HR 4 in the invitation to this meeting. We've posted them also at the website and at freepress.org. If you want to look at the actual bills, they're really not that hard to read, amazingly enough. You can do that with those links. Okay, go ahead, Joel, sorry.
And you can always go to Wikipedia.
Right, the cartoons aren't so good. The illustrations aren't real good, but the text is readable. Okay, go ahead.
Now, Mr. Conyers said, in 15 minutes, I'm gonna do a tribute to Harry Belafonte. I need my speech on the floor in 15 minutes. Just go to Wikipedia. So if a member, I was schwitzing. For all you Jewish people, that means sweating. All right, so HR 4. Now, this is really, HR 4 is very simple. HR 4 basically reestablishes the 1965 Civil Rights Act. And that's the, I'm not gonna go into all the technical stuff, it's not necessary. Just know that in Shelby versus Holder, the 1965 Civil Rights Act was gutted because in his infinite wisdom, Supreme Court Justice Roberts said that discrimination was now over, that everything was fine. He was wrong, right? Based on what happened right after that ridiculous ruling. What this will do is the following. It's pretty progressive, I think. A state and all of its political subdivisions shall be subject to preclearance of voting practice changes. That's with the Department of Justice. For a 10-year period, if 15 or more voting rights violations occurred in the state during the previous 25 years, that won't be too difficult, right, to find that. 2, 10 or more violations occurred during the previous 25 years, at least one of which was committed by the state itself. A political subdivision as a separate unit shall also be subject to preclearance for a 10-year period if 3 or more voting rights violations occurred there during the previous 12 years. I'm going to make 3 additional points. I'm going to close. Number one, these bills should be passed within the first 100 days. Because if you pass HR, for example, if you pass HR 4, all these crazy things that are going on in general assemblies across the country, which are Republican, they wouldn't be able to do restrictive voter IDs and closing down early voting sites and all the right-wing, fascistic, authoritarian, racist, bull explicative, because they'd have to pre-clear it with the Justice Department. In fact, I hope that they pass this. They should do this as soon as possible. And from what I understand, there's a lot of energy around that. I'll close by saying, having worked in Congress most of my career and now worked out of it, I am concerned about the fragmentation and the silos of the voting rights movement and the election protection movement. You really have to put so much pressure on Congress to do anything. Even the Progressive Caucus, you got to put pressure on them. That is a discussion, Sluggo, that I really, when I'm on these calls, I hear people and I look at the chat. There are brilliant people on this call. But I hope we can utilize this brain trust to talk about, all right, I just went over 2 very landmark bills. How are we going to get them passed? We really need that discussion. For example, Dorothy Reich could get on the phone. Dorothy, I'm gonna have to put you on the spot, baby. If Dorothy Reich wants to, she can call Representative Ted Lieu right now and get a bill introduced, because I've seen her do it. There are other people on this call who've got, you know, connects to other members of Congress, or you have your own constituencies, but I think this coalition will need to take some kind of a leadership in making sure that, you know, A, these bills get explained to the public, and B, we get them passed. In conclusion, when we do our Save Our Democracy campaign, which is a project of this coalition, we're not going to do it on the 25th. We just talked with George Mason today, to Rabbi Professor Mark Gopin, and we're going to wait some additional weeks because we really want to go big on this. But we're going to have to explain this bill to the civil society, as Tom Hayden used to say, to the levers of power that control, you know, these kind of political decisions, and members of Congress and their staff, because these two bills can change America forever. But anyway, that's it.
Wow, fantastic. we'll put Howie on hold for a minute. Does anyone want to speak to any of the provisions that Joel has just explained in this bill? If you want to raise your hand and speak to the specific stuff. Ray Lutz, go ahead.
I just wanted to support what Joel said about the how important this bill is, especially the fact that we're getting these hand-marked paper ballots. Now, the ballot marking devices are not perfect, but they're better than the old direct recording electronic DRE machines that we did have. We're going to have to continue to fight to try to reduce those, but we have a pretty big special interest group, which is the disabled community that wants to be able to vote independently, and they're pushing for at least having one of those in each of the voting locations, and so we probably need to support that. But this one fact is so important in getting these hand-marked paper ballots to be used and required by law throughout the country, that I think it no matter what else is in this, this is worth getting this bill through. And there's so many other good things about it.
All right, Emily Levy.
Thanks.
Emily.
And then, thanks.
And then Laura.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Joel, for that presentation. Sure. And in Scrutineers, we've been working on looking at what are the things that we most think need to be amended about the bill. And I feel like we as an organization and we as a movement could really use some help from you, Joel, or from someone about strategies for trying to get the bill strengthened in some of the election security, election protection flaws that it has. And I think we'll probably end up supporting it, but I'm not ready to give up on the idea of getting it to be better first. Is there, Joel, are you the right person to talk to, or one of the right people to talk to about how to go about pushing for the changes that we think are the most crucial?
I think I can add, yeah, that's what I do for a living. That's what I did for most of my career. The way to do that, by the way, that's an excellent question. The way you do that is you got to find a member of Congress of the Committee of Jurisdiction, which would be, you know, the House Judiciary Committee. We happen to have access to the lead staffer on the Hill, Keenan Keller, who I'm very, very close to, who I worked with for 13 years. And I'd be more than happy to be the intermediary, by the way. We would have to have a two-page, Emily, I think you would be very good as to consider being a co-author of this. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I think you'd be very good at this, and others who'd want to work with you, is we would have to have a letter that says, dear members of Congress, we're so glad that you're introducing these bills. However, we'd like to share some ideas with you to strengthen these bills. They are the following, and you got to bullet point them. And then I will send it to the staff. I know all the staffers on the Judiciary Committee, and we could also find some other organizations. I'm sure that'd be more than happy, you know, that I work with to sign on to this. And yes, I mean, that's how you do it. And then that can be sent to the members of Congress who are introducing the bill. And as Mike Hirsch will tell you, because Mike's an expert on the Hill, is you got to go to the staffers.
So it's going through 11 committees, this bill.
Wow.
So do we need to talk to the staffers for each of those committees for this? And we don't know what subcommittees it's going through. Like, and if you want me to talk to you about this off of this call, I could give you a call separately.
No. I think this is very, very salient, Emily. I've heard a lot of other people say the same thing. I don't want to take up Sluggo. You're too much time.
Go. I want to ask, as you, are there going to be hearings on this bill?
Yeah. So whenever you introduce legislation, you have hearings, and that would be the best. That would be a great place to have witnesses who say we're in support of the bill. However, we would like to add some provisions that we think, you know, could strengthen the bill. The key is, you know, you got to keep it real. Dorothy will tell you, you got to love these staff up. You got to love the members up. You got right, Dorothy. You got to give them a big old hug. And and so the key is to find out who are the two or three staffers on the House side and the Senate side that are driving this, and then who are the organizations that are already at the table, and then try to impact the groups that are already at the table. So Andrew Miller will probably be the person I would suggest that we go to.
Wow, this is really mind-boggling that we're gonna, so if we have hearings on this, then the people are gonna be exposed to the issues of what we're really trying to deal with election protection. I mean, the hearings themselves are gonna be enormously educational, political, and important, Joel.
Well, the hearings are gonna be very important. And now I tell you one thing that this group can do, I'd be more than happy to organize it. We can organize our own congressional briefings. I've only organized about 1,000 of them in my career, so we can.
That would be amazing.
Mike Hirsch, we've organized many a congressional briefing, haven't we, and press conferences.
Well, definitely you have, and I help bring pizzas and stuff. But Joel is an expert. He's done this over and over.
That's why I don't have any hair, man. So. And then our symposiums at George Mason and at Yale, I'll invite staffers, and it's hard to get members. I'll try to get some members, but, you know, try to get staffers and members at our symposium. So if, for example, we have people who can talk about how we can improve these bills, we can use the symposiums, you know, as well. But there's a science to it. But the larger question is, you know, what happens when, once the bills are introduced, the question is, when will they be introduced? Clearly, they got to be introduced as soon as possible because we got about 2 years. We know we have 2 years, right? Then the second question is, will McConnell filibuster? Hell yes. Will Manchin go against filibuster? No, he's already said he's going to support filibuster. I don't want to use any explicatives on this. This is a family hour here. But in order to deal with the filibuster, we're going to have a movement that we've never seen before, maybe resembling the Black Lives Matter movement or the Civil Rights movement. But it's going to have to be, a lot of it's going to have to be, you know, an unbelievable pressure on members of Congress. And we're going to have, those are the conversations that we're going to have to get through the Senate. The House, you know, we got the House, we got the Senate, we got the White House, right? The filibuster, there are ways to get around the filibuster, but unless there is, you know, unbelievable pressure, especially the blue, I'm also very concerned about blue dog Democrats. If you don't know what a blue dog Democrat is, it's real simple. They're corporate Democrats, usually right-wing Democrats that often vote with the Republicans, because in order for them to win their districts, they have to get Republicans. I dealt more with the blue dogs than I did, you know, my dog growing up.
It was also blue. Okay, so we got Ruth, Jennifer, Jed, and Dorothy. Or you put your hand back up, so we'll have you after Dorothy, okay? Ruth Strauss?
Yeah, I have to admit that I haven't done my homework, and I certainly will, but I have to say, and I'm could kick myself because I don't know where it is on my computer, but I had seen a long essay about how the bill is a Trojan horse, meaning there, you know, there are a lot of good things in it, but there are a lot of things that aren't. And I do have a link, but I haven't read it yet, to the ACLU having put out a paper about what is wrong with it. And the third thing is, and I'm sure everybody knows this, those ballot marking machines, as Lulu has pointed out, they have to be separated from the tabulators. Thank you.
Yeah, and also from the internet. We don't want any internet involvement with the voting process except for registration. You can register on the internet, but you don't want votes cast or counted on the internet. Thank you for that, Ruth. Jennifer, then Jed, Dorothy, Laura, and then we'll go to Howie Hawkins to talk about the third party aspects. Jennifer?
Yeah, so Joel, that was a great synopsis of all of the issues. There's two parts. We have to find the people of Congress to get to, but before that, what is that we're going to give them? We should work on, and I think the people that are the most focused on this, we should have a separate meeting in the next couple of days. Just for that, I know that Laura's got a page that she wrote over the weekend that's got a lot of these issues. We should create a document, all of us together, that we all agree on. And once we have it, and it's the same language, you know, the thing is you repeat the same thing over and over. We memorize the right words, we say them over and over. Then the second part, going to a legislator. I was at a hearing with John Sarbanes, who is the author of HR, which is this great bill. And he's a great guy. So you just have to get to him. So everybody think about how you get to John Sarbanes. And then there are other people, of course, that are important as well. I know that I'm connected to Zoe Lofgren's office. She was the head of the committee that investigated the ballot marking devices manufacturers last year. We could get her involved. Everybody pushes everybody so that everyone's hearing about it everywhere. Targeting John. The first thing is we have to have the document. And then everyone send it everywhere. And then everyone's got, oh, I saw that document. I saw that document. And we get the word out there. So okay. Can we have this week a meeting with Joel, Laura, Robin, Ray, Harvey, you, me, the people that really are going to work on this and get it together, make it happen.
Well, how about Friday? Do everything on Friday?
Friday works for me. Does it work for the main people I've mentioned here?
Yeah, Jennifer, I wanted to say, first of all, that was a brilliant analysis and a great strategy. Our own Mike Hirsch is very close to Sarbanes and knows him personally and knows his staff.
There it is.
But I think you're correct. When you start dealing with, remember, the members of Congress typically stay out of stuff until there's so much pressure on them that you get it through their staff into a meeting with the members. But getting to Sarbanes' staff is ingenious. I think that's the way to go. So I think we really need to type them. We need to make sure that Mike is involved and PDA is involved and the, let me tell you what it becomes. It becomes a negotiation between the staff and the coalition of conscious that's been created. That's how, if you want to change legislation, look, if there was a lot of organizations that used to call me about HR 676, right, and ask me to make changes, I would do it.
Does anyone else have a quick one before we sign off? Robin, we'll get you after the sign off here. So. We still have more than 70 people on this call. It's phenomenal. Right. This was a great one. As always, thank you, Howie. Thank you, Joel Siegel. So there will be a special convening, which Joel will run on with Jennifer on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern time, noon Pacific. I will send out a notice. Mike will send out a notice, I hope. Steve Caruso will be with us again. A lot of this stuff we're posting at the website, Election Protection 2024, and at the freepress.org website. I had a piece still up at Reader Supported News, as did Bill Simpich. We need to support Reader Supported News they're really good about publishing our stuff on election protection. They really get it. Mark Ash, the editor, is a pleasure to deal with, and so look there. Again, we'll officially sign off. This was the 40th count of 40 election protection, grassroots emergency election protection calls. We're looking forward to having Arnold Schwarzenegger on one of our future calls, we're hoping, along with LeBron James. And we'll work on that. In the meantime, thank you everybody for participating. Mike Kirsch, Steve Caruso, thanks for engineering. Joel Siegel, your co-convening this week was fantastic as always. And we're gonna turn off the recording. This means, by the way, in the ensuing discussions, four-letter words are more than welcome. So you can say gosh and darn and whatever else you like. Okay, thank you again. We'll see you in a couple minutes, and we will certainly join some of you on Friday. And then again, we will have the regular call next Monday. That'll be number 41.